And then, to confirm that, I act upon it. Now, in all... I should confess that I've made quite a bit of money using that formula by evaluating projects which have been successful or unsuccessful in CEDA, the Canadian International Development Agency. One simple way you evaluate projects is to find out whether or not those three steps were taken. Was there a good knowledge base? Yes, always. And then it starts going haywire. What about the volition? Who talked about it? Was there an educational component? Was it related to the culture? Well, we didn't have time, because they often overleap that and go into the action and build the dam anyway. And meanwhile, thousands of people are dislocated and they blow up the dam because they don't like what has been done to them. You go through this and you apply it to your own learning, to your own education, to your own family, to any development project. And it's a very useful, simple formula. The knowledge base has to be solid. The motivation has to be given time in order to be understood and incorporated in the lives of the people. And then it has to take action. You can forget the first and you have difficulty. You can overleap the second and get into action. That's more like revolution. Revolutions are heavy on action, but not very strong on the other two, and so forth. So you can have that formula and use it for whatever purposes you see fit. Those of you who are in Baha'i communities, you wonder why magic isn't occurring. You got lots of knowledge. The books are all there. Courses are taking place. What time is being given for motivation, for discussion, for understanding? And then people know what to do with that knowledge as soon as they've got it. Perhaps enough said about the formula. Let me conclude with just a few more summarizing remarks. And I understand there'll be time for questions on this subject. And I should make it clear that much of what I've said is simply my own ideas that I've derived from my own experience in development and some traveling in the third world, and from my limited understanding of what we as Baha'is understand as our role, as our mission, to bring that kind of development process to the world at large. Over the past 30 years, there have been many, many plans for development, regional, national, international, and they've been mostly economic in their intent and in their purpose and strategy. And this results from our materialistic view of the human condition. Man is an economic animal, said Marx, and partly from the visible and concrete nature of economic improvement. If you build that, you can see the immediate results. Moreover, economic objectives are more readily recognized by politicians and public alike. Based on the success of the Marshall Plan in Europe in the rehabilitation of Europe, international aid agencies and the World Bank and the UN placed economic goals and measurements at the center of their program, in the belief that improvement in economic conditions would bring in their wake widespread benefits to all aspects of life. And they didn't do that. It began to be clear that development was not simply a matter of economics, but rather touched all aspects of society and drew upon all of its dynamics. Third world spokesmen, academics, UN agencies, and even economists began calling for a more balanced approach to development. And terms like integrated, basic needs, comprehensive, multi-sectored, and holistic began to express the desire to see development moved forward on all fronts. In 1970, these ideas gave rise to what is known as the New International Economic Order, NIEO, reflecting the views of most of the third world countries. At the same time, the World Bank shifted its traditional, almost exclusive support of physical, plant, and industrial development to more humanistic, more non-material goals. At the very root of our question is our eternal quest for a more complete understanding of the nature of man and the manner of his development. What theory and practice of socio-economic development conforms best with the nature of man? And all of these questions, whether it's development or education or a happy family, We have to give some attention to who are we as human beings. What is our nature? What are we made of? And any program must serve the development of that whole being. Abdu'l-Bahá said very simply, made up of three aspects, the physical and the mental, which we take fairly good care of, and the spiritual, upon which we founder and don't do too well. Where do you go for spiritual development? How can full human potential be realigned and released? What are the chief wellsprings of human energy, creativity, and motivation? How can man serve society? How can society serve the best interests of man? These are age-old questions, and the answers must be based on our most profound understanding of man's essential nature. So in the final analysis, all of these questions resolve themselves to what is man? What is our source of motivation? What do we believe in? What is our purpose? And if a development project doesn't deal with that or answer that in some way, it's inadequate or incomplete. Our greatest underutilized and inexhaustible renewable resource is the human spirit. Our challenge is to create opportunities in our social and economic activities which will foster integrated fulfillment of man's physical, mental, and spiritual potential. New structures, new relationships, new strategies, new instruments must be created to give everyone, everywhere, the opportunity not only for personal growth, but for service to mankind. A service which in itself is the surest way to personal growth. Baha'is are dedicated to the promotion of unity, the establishment of justice, the creation of social order, to the service of mankind, to the support of the civilizing forces in society, objectives shared by many people throughout the world. What must distinguish the Baha'i approach is the way in which and the degree to which basic spiritual principles are maintained in all social and economic programs. So the development projects at the village or regional level enrich the life of the spirit as well as the life of the body and mind. Instead of using tradition and custom to serve economic objectives, economic plans must be seen to serve the entire culture of the society. Now that notion was given most eloquent expression by Schumacher, who wrote the book Small is Beautiful. There's a wonderful chapter there called Buddhist Economics, where he simply turns the whole economic system on its head and says the purpose of our culture, our mythology, our belief system, our motivation is not to create more economically productive people. It's the other way around. The economy is to serve our culture, is to serve our mythology, our belief systems, so that our culture and our life and our spirit will be enriched. That's a pretty hard thing for us to grasp, isn't it, as hard-headed North Americans? But unless that kind of turnaround occurs, I think we are simply engaged in a greater and greater materialistic venture, which will totally use up our resources and deny us of our full spiritual potential. Well, I hope there'll be some questions. I'm not sure that I've made it clear why we're doing or why we're trying to do what we're trying to do. It's an exciting field, as some people call it. It's an uncharted sea. We've launched on it. We know there's a need because the response to our initiatives in all parts of the third world has been very great. And we've been welcomed, oddly enough, by many of the funding agencies as a group which brings something new or special into the whole development process. And we must keep that very pure. What distinguishes us is that emphasis on the essentially spiritual nature of society. And it was all said very well in the Bible. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these other things shall be added unto it. And we're simply trying to do that again with modern technology and new vision and new insight. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. I think you can tell that the ideas that you suggested were very well received. It is an unusual perspective on the spiritual and material development of humanity. Are there any questions?
The question was, I think, what skills or talents or professions are most urgently needed if development is to take place in the right or balanced way. Is that part of the question? Well, it's a question which my students keep asking me, and which my son asks me. So I sent him down to Colombia, South America, for a year and a half, and hoped that he would learn the answer. And he's back going to university. He still hasn't found the answer. I can't get away from the importance and centrality of agriculture as the most important thing before us, the production of food, the need of people in the world for food, the processing food, the storage of food, the importance of trees. Very well known Baha'i, the Richard St. Barbe Baker, the man of the trees, he's known as all over the world, has pointed out to us that if the devil doesn't get us, our own deforestation is going to get us. Because what we're doing to ourselves is destroying the oxygen, destroying much of the arable land of the globe. I would think that somebody embarking on a career could be well advised to work in some field of agriculture or food or forestry, none of which I have any competency in. So I got launched too far back. The other area that I think is also clearly needed internationally is the area of health, or the health sciences and the health services, because there's a lot of illness and sickness and distress still around the world. And the other area, which is closer to my own field, is the field of education. The importance of education in the Baha'i writings. The appetite. Unless you've seen, well, if you've taught school in Canada or the United States, that's very difficult. I quit after 1 year and decided I'd teach university instead. It's much easier. You go to the third world and you see these people, these children who have walked for miles, who listen, who work, who do their homework. They have an appetite for learning. I visited schools in Cuba, and the children there love what they're learning. Why? Because they're fighting a revolution. The revolution still goes on. Whether we like what's going on there or not, it works in the minds of the young people. They are building a new world. They're building a new Cuba, and that excites them. So education, wherever it can be presented to people who are hungry, is a great service that we can provide. And there are so many other things. You can go right off from there and go into the field of high technology. Many of the third world countries are desperately eager to get into high technology. I have friends now who have good training in that field and are now teaching at community colleges, high schools, universities in Africa, and very happy at what they're doing because they're building that society up. The other area that I think needs a lot of study, and this is a kind of an introverted notion, I think we don't know much about development. So I like the idea of people developing theories of development. That sounds very academic, and it is. But the notion and the science of development study, of the whole process of development, is not well understood. We have to know what development is. Now, if that's hard to appreciate, look at it at the individual level. We understand our own psychology to some extent. We've spent many, many hours ourselves, and many people have thought and written, philosophers over the centuries, about the nature of human development. But how do societies grow? How do nations grow? How is the world held together? What are the processes, the dynamics of development? That needs to be studied if we are to administer and plan development around the world. And almost everything I think of as I go through my mind, I say, that's a good field, go into that. I can't think of anything. I have a friend who has a chartered accountant degree. Never been out of Canada. He came and he said, I'd like to go to Africa. I said, what are you, a chartered accountant? I said, no chance. He didn't believe me. He went to New York, Washington, went to the World Bank. They hired him in 2 days, sent him to Nigeria, where he is now at this time administering one of the most costly projects out of the World Bank's reservoir in Nigeria, because he had training as a chartered accountant, and I should mention, he also had worked for 10 years amongst the Indian people in northern Canada. So he knew something about that. And here was a chartered accountant, not likely candidate in my thinking, but they desperately needed that kind of management. And the best thing he did was to train the people in Nigeria in accountancy. So I would think that dead-end careers would be a brewmaster or a distillery expert or things like that, which perhaps not may not be the most uniting and unifying and most valuable thing that you could do. Or the other need that just occurred to me, not just now, it occurred to me before, but the need in the third world for entrepreneurial skills. There's a great gap between the high-level rich people and the peasants. The middle class, the entrepreneurial, the manager of businesses and industry, desperately needed. For Baha'is who want to go abroad and who have some business skill, you could go to Radio Baha'i. There's an offer. You go to Radio Baha'i in Ecuador, in the city of Otavalo. And oddly enough, there is not one radio shop in that entire city. And if you set up a radio repair shop, you wouldn't be able to deal with all the customers. Because when they get rid of their radio set goes, they don't know what to do with it. It may take some very minor adjustment. Somebody who knows how to run a small business, operate a small business, and be dependent upon, can almost write his own ticket in many third world countries, especially if you're adding to their economy and providing a skill which they don't have, and if you work with somebody from that country in a training capacity. So I'm sorry I'm going on and on, but I can't think of anything that is inappropriate, hardly, that could be exported and used in a social and economic development field. The best is to find out what you've got and see if there's a need for it. When the Universal House of Justice, the supreme governing body of the Baha'i faith in Haifa, came out with the message that we should become actively involved in social and economic development, it didn't say the third world only. It said the entire Baha'i world. I find it very hard to get perspective on my own society. And so we have had sessions in our communities in Canada through our local assemblies, and we said, all right, we are now emerging from obscurity. It isn't sufficient for Baha'is to remain concerned with their own internal development. We now must serve the community around us. The first thing that occurs to us is we're frightened. My God, what are we supposed to do? There's so much. All these other agencies are there, welfare agencies, charitable agencies, government agencies. What are we to offer? Well, I think it's the same answer. What the world, the Western world that we're familiar with, is desperately in need of is the same kind of spiritual perspective, the same kind of connectedness with a divine notion that I've been trying to describe as necessary in all development projects. I guess the answer that I would give to a community, and this is the answer we have given in Canada, what should we do in social and economic development in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan? I say, I don't know. You live in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. You tell us what you think you and your fellow citizens in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan need to know. Well, what does that mean the Baha'is have to do? It means they have to study Moose Jaw. What is it? Are they anxiously concerned with the needs of the age or the community in which they live? What do the people there believe is hurting? Where do they hurt? Is it the family? Is it drugs? Is it alcohol? Is it violence? Is it loneliness? Unless the Baha'i community there can address those matters, much of anything it does is irrelevant. It's got to deal with people and how they feel and where they hurt. And that's a big order. But that's exactly what Baha'u'llah came for, to serve mankind. And if we can't gear ourselves to serve the same kind of immediate, urgent needs, then we'll be seen as irrelevant and unnecessary.
I decided to to title my remarks this morning, not what to do in Moose Jaw, but how to do in Moose Jaw, or how to do any place else. Since the Rizwan 1983 message from the Universal House and the October 1983 message from the Universal House of Justice, where we were challenged to, quote, greater involvement in the development and the social of the social and economic life of peoples, we may have been asking ourselves the wrong question. We've been asking ourselves, what should we do? what project, what activity, what program should we undertake at the local level in our community? And last night, the final question to Dr. Eifert was,